Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to an electrifying episode of Tech Stuff you're sure to get a charge out of. That's right, I'm Jonathan Strickland, one of the two hosts.
And I'm Lauren Volkelbaum, the other host. And Jonathan, I think that we should really ground ourselves here.
Oh, that's very good. I'm glad you're staying up with current events. Do you really want to go down this road, Lauren?
I don't at all. Yeah, I regret my decision.
You don't like puns,
No,
Lauren.
I don't.
Chris Paulette instilled in me a love of puns that runs deep. Anyway, you may have already guessed we're going to be talking a little bit about electricity in this episode, and that's because we are focusing finally, after many, many, many people have asked us, to do a full episode about Nikola Tesla.
Yay!
The internet legend,
the
man placed on a virtual pedestal on the internet that is gleaming and beauteous and will zap you if you ever dare say anything against him.
He's staring at us from the walls of the podcast room right now.
Yes, he is. Yes,
judging
he is.
Us.
Now, the question of whether or not he'll be staring at us in our new studio
Ooh.
Remains to be answered.
Yeah.
We'll probably end up propping him up on a mic stand or something so he's still judging us constantly.
Yeah.
But yeah, we wanted to talk about Tesla, kind of talk about his contributions to technology, and also maybe take a critical look at some of the claims about Tesla and some of the misconceptions people have about his contributions.
Yeah, because he's a mythological figure, really, a mythological nerd figure, which is fabulous. I mean, it's really terrific, and it's understandable why, because he by the end of his life was so downtrodden, and there's nothing that people and geeks especially love more than an anti-hero.
Yeah, here's a guy who has been beaten down. He's seen his fortunes dwindle away. He's made some bad choices. He has all the earmarks of a classic geek. Geeks love this underdog kind of story. And when you get into things like sort of the demonification of other people, Edison in particular,
Boom.
Yeah, but even people like J.P. Morgan and Westinghouse, then it seems like the whole world had turned against him. And depending on how you look at his story, it can definitely come across that way. But that's doing a little bit of a disservice to the entire tale. And
reason why I'm talking about it in this way is because there is what some people refer to as the cult of Tesla, right? This idea of elevating him beyond what his contributions were. There was a cartoon that I think a lot of you guys out there saw because you posted about it on our Facebook page, that the Oatmeal did, all about Tesla and his contributions and his rivalry with Edison, and kind of comparing him favorably against Edison in every single category, and saying that there should be a Tesla museum. And so we wanted to talk about what Tesla actually did and what he did not do, and whether or not he deserves all those accolades.
And just before anyone who is a rabid fan of the Oatmeal gets on us, because I do not want to incite your anger. We realize that it's a comic, and that although many of the statements are factual, the writer, whose name I'm completely forgetting right now, has come out and said that, hey, this is a comic. I'm a comic artist, and some of this was hyperbole. So
yeah,
hyperbole.
No, I like it's hyperbole. It's way better than that super one. I like the hyperbole a lot more. I am never going to let you live that down, and we are not re-recording it. Let's move on. So, yeah, Tesla, born on July 10th, 1856, in what is now Croatia. Now, 1856 by the Gregorian calendar. If you have looked up Tesla's birth and you saw that it was actually in June 28th, that's because at the time they were keeping time with the Julian calendar.
Huh.
And it's only when you account for that, when you match those up, that you realize that, okay, well, if you're using a real calendar like I do, the one that's on my smartphone, and that's the only way I know what day it is, it was July 10th. So 1856, July 10th, and born in part of Austria-Hungary, which is now Croatia. And as a boy, he went to what we would think of in the United States as elementary school or primary school, and studied German, arithmetic, and religion, because his dad was a pastor.
And his mom's father was a pastor, both in the Orthodox Church, actually. So
yeah, so he definitely had a religious upbringing. And
his father really wanted him to be a priest, by the way.
Yes, he did, a lot. In fact, he was not so thrilled about Tesla going into engineering. When he was a young boy, Tesla's older brother, named Dane, died in a tragic accident. He actually fell off a horse and died. There were some stories that Tesla, or Nikola Tesla, was playing around and spooked the horse that caused Dane to fall. Yes.
And also, actually, I've heard, I'm sorry, I meant to insert this earlier,
sure.
but the very first terrific tall tale that I heard about Tesla was that he was born on a dark and stormy night to lightning.
Right, right. He was born on the stroke of midnight as lightning crashed in the sky, and that one person said he would be a boy of storms, and his mother said, no, he shall be a man of the light. I might be inserting some of my hyperbole in there.
But goodness my gracious.
So, and as a child, they moved around quite a bit as his father was finding a church to be pastor in. And in 1870, so remember, he's born in 1856. By 1870, he moves in with his aunt and starts to attend a school where a teacher named Martin Sekulich. So Martin Sekulich is teaching there, and he's teaching math and physics, and Tesla finds both the professor and the subject matter fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes really focused on math and physics. And in fact, he's so focused, he graduates a year early.
Goodness.
So he was certainly a man of genius. He possessed a genius and an affinity for physics, for math, for engineering, that far outstripped most of his contemporaries.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But then again, this is also the era where we start seeing these technologies form. And so it was an exciting time if you were interested in physics, because this is when we're making lots of big discoveries, things that some people say are low-hanging fruit, you know, in retrospect. The idea that there were all these discoveries to make, but it's hard to see how we're going to advance from this point forward because all the quote-unquote easy things have been discovered. Not that any of these things were easy. It's just that now you have to become increasingly specialized in whatever scientific field you're in to really understand it.
Sure. But while doing this research, it kind of blew my mind. I actually don't have a strong history in electronic background, and it blew my mind that it wasn't until 1873 that James Clerk Maxwell proved that light is electromagnetic energy.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is he's growing up at a time when these discoveries are being made, and that would impact his own work and, in fact, drive him to achieve great things. Also 1873, that was the year he contracted cholera.
And it was due to the cholera that he kind of shaped the rest of his life.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Supposedly.
There are quite a few things. Yeah, because if you've heard about Tesla, you know that he reportedly had a bit of obsessive-compulsive disorder,
mm-hmm.
that he was a germaphobe, that he was a clean – he was obsessed with being clean and having clean things around him.
He reported in his own biography that he had a severe aversion to touching other people's hair, that he had to do things if they required repetition in the repetition of threes. And if he did not, then he had to stop and restart.
Yeah. So he may have developed some of these peculiarities at this time. He was in bed for about 9 months, nearly died a few times. So I would imagine that was definitely something that would shape you, whether or not that – I'm sure there were other issues that are beyond just getting sick. There mm-hmm. were probably some things that were psychologically part of his – being from the point where he was born, but we don't know to what extent, obviously. And you know what's odd to me? I might as well talk about this for right now. So, neat freak, if you want to put it that way,
sure.
Germaphobe, mm-hmm. Doesn't like touching people, loved pigeons.
Loved them.
Rats with wings. That's what they are.
Well, that was also towards the end of his life that he...
became obsessed with them?
Became incredibly obsessed with pigeons.
Yeah, it just makes me think of that great scene in the documentary, The Producers. Boyds. Filthy, rotten Boyds.
Yeah. I appreciate that your Yiddish accent there is better than mine. That's excellent.
I should also point out that's the 1968 version of the documentary, The Producers, not the musical version starring Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick. Actually, it's Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder. I'm getting off track. Anyway, he's definitely got some interesting personality quirks. 1874, he starts to move around a little bit, mostly hiding out from the army, because in that part of the world, in Austro-Hungary, look, I can't say that.
Military, we know words good, guys.
Yes, we do. Thank goodness we don't speak into a microphone for a living, right? But back in that time, in that part of the world, army service was required of all young men. There was 3 years mandatory service.
Mm-hmm.
And Tesla was not too keen on doing that. So
right.
He kind of...
he was dodging it a little bit.
Yeah, he was dodging. That's the best way of putting it. The next year, 1875, he starts to attend the Austrian Polytechnic School. And he starts off really strong. He's doing really well in his classes. He mm-hmm. understands the concepts.
Unlike some other visionaries, like say Stephen Hawking, he was very good in school.
Yep. Also, you know, not like Einstein or some of the other famous folks who seem to have trouble in class. Now that was true for about a year, and then about that second year, things began to take a little bit of a dip because he began to point out shortcomings, or what he thought of as shortcomings, in his professor's understanding of things like electrical engineering, and saying things like, you know, you could build a device that does the same thing without this one component that you are claiming is absolutely necessary for it to work.
That furthermore puts off gigantic electrical shocks
right.
that are actually pretty dangerous.
Like, you could do it this way, and then if you mouth off to your professors often enough, you might find yourself in some academic trouble, and that's kind of what Tesla did. He began to get disillusioned about pursuing studies in an academic setting, and after about a little over 3 years, he actually dropped out of the Polytechnic School. So he moved to Slovenia in 1878 to work as a draftsman for an engineering firm. But by 1879, the next year, some police officials show up and ask to see his residence papers.
Ooh, yeah.
Which mm-hmm. he did not have. So then he was escorted back to his family's home because he didn't have a residence permit for Slovenia. And that same year, his father passes away. And Tesla starts to a new career as a teacher in the same school that he attended as a boy.
Mm-hmm.
But realizes very quickly that's not
that's
what
not
he
for
wanted.
Him.
Yeah, he doesn't want to do that. So then the next year, 1880, he moves to Prague. He tries to attend Carl Ferdinand University, but he's unable to understand Greek or Czech, both of which were prerequisites to attend as a student.
Mm-hmm.
So instead he audits classes. And he begins to work for the Budapest Telephone Exchange and also the Central Telegraph Office.
1880, by the way, was the year that that Thomas Edison unveiled his electric incandescent lamp to the public for the first time.
Yep. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. There are some big things happening at the same time that Tesla's kind of he hasn't really made a name for himself yet. He's mm-hmm. been a very enthusiastic student at times of his life, and he is certainly interested in electronics, or really we should say electricity,
right,
not electronics.
Right. At the time, that
electronics
was not a thing.
Is too yeah. early, but electricity and its applications. So he does that for a couple of years. In 1882, he joins the Continental Edison Company and begins to work on things like dynamos, which are, well, you've heard us talk about dynamos in our episodes about electromagnets and motors and induction and the reverse of that. So I won't go into it. But anyway, he starts to work on that. Now, this means that he becomes an employee, although, indirectly and way down the line, of Edison.
Right.
So, yeah, he's sitting there working for the company of the man who would one day become his greatest rival, according to myth.
Arch nemesis.
Yeah.
They have Dragon Ball style fights in the sky.
Yeah, they also would occasionally catch Pokemon, but it was only the one that shoots the electricity.
I don't know which one.
Oh,
is.
Come on, it's Pikachu. I was trying to bait Lauren to see if I could get her to. I actually
sorry.
Know that. Dang. You win this time, Vogelbaum. So at this time he also gets the idea for the AC induction motor, although asterisk, not necessarily the first person to think about that.
Right, right.
Supposedly in a vision.
Well, supposedly he had these visions. Supposedly he was very light and audio sensitive, and occasionally upon looking at one object or having a certain idea would get an extremely strong visual perception of something that he had already seen or of nothing imaginary, unless it was a new invention. But yeah, occasionally he would get these flashes that kind of disturbed him a lot, according to his autobiography.
Yeah. So essentially what would happen is he would be walking through a park and look at a beautiful scene, and then suddenly an idea would form, fully formed, in his head. Like, not something he had been puzzling about necessarily. It might just be, hey, boom, here are all the pieces, and the puzzle is completely put together. You know, we opened up the box, and the puzzle's there.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you've been trying to fix this problem for years, and, oh, here's the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, supposedly he was walking through the city park in Budapest with a friend and saw a beautiful sunset and quoted some poetry and then had an idea for the induction motor.
Yeah.
And just drew it in the sand and then kept walking.
Yeah, whether or not that's true, it's hard to say, because Tesla, as it turns out, was something of a showman.
A little bit of an unreliable narrator, I would say.
Yeah, unreliable narrator is a very kind way of putting it. Same sort of thing is true of all the big names at this time, because they were the rock stars that era. So Edison, same sort of thing. Edison was a master at PR. You know, beyond being the head of a very successful research and development firm, he was very good at presenting his ideas to a public and explaining why they were the best ideas, even if they weren't the best ideas.
Right, right.
Tesla was he was no slouch in that department either. There are a lot of people who will paint Tesla as being the dedicated genius who is working for the betterment of all mankind, but doesn't ever look to gain glory in the process. That's not entirely accurate.
No, that's not. If you've ever seen any of the photographs that he took around his equipment, I would say that those are not the mark of someone who's not a showman.
I saw this one photograph. He looked just like David Bowie. I might be mixing that up with a documentary, though. So then in 1882, this whole time where he's working for Edison, he's got this idea for the AC induction motor. He also is reportedly not paid some money for the work he's doing for Edison Company, at least not all of it. Like, there's money due to him that's not being paid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is partly what lays the groundwork for this whole idea of the heated rivalry between Edison and Tesla.
Sure.
A lot of it is money that's withheld from Tesla that was promised to him.
I mean, and yeah, and this is when he was what, 26 at the time?
Yeah,
and in Paris, and so he was really distantly connected to Edison at the time, but
right.
Yeah.
But
apparently, a grudge started.
Right. You use this, if you use this and just say, like, this is indicative of how Edison treats people, it would apparently become company policy not to pay people for their work. That's what's suggested out of this. It also becomes, you know, a common thread in Tesla's life of getting cheated out of things that were owed him, which makes you wonder if it happens so frequently, why is that? Is it all due to – was it just that he only worked with corrupt individuals and companies, or was it that there was something else going on here besides that part of the story? I have no doubt that Tesla was really cheated out of many of the things he deserved.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I'm not sure that he was cheated out of everything that is attributed as being something
right,
he deserved. But then we'll get into that again.
Yeah, yeah.
1884, he makes the big move from Europe to America.
He had basically no money at the time, from what I understand.
Well, he definitely had no money by the time he got there. yeah, it took a little longer for him to get there than he had anticipated. According to one timeline I read, the ship he was on – this is just Tesla's luck, right? The ship he was on had a mutiny aboard the ship.
Oh, my goodness. I did not read about this.
And supposedly, Tesla himself was nearly thrown overboard.
Wow.
Probably for being a witch. That last part is just me guessing. There was no reason given as to why Tesla would have been thrown overboard, so I'm just inventing one. But no, apparently the ship he was on had a mutiny aboard it. He ended up getting to New York way later than when he expected, and according to some reports, had 4 cents in his pocket. Now, also, depending upon whom you ask, he either immediately went to work for Edison, as in got off the boat, filed the
went
papers
into the office, yeah.
And went into the office, or he started the next day. That seems to be the two stories. Either way, I think that's pretty remarkable. And he works for Edison, and he's helping them with their systems. Supposedly, again, he started to suggest to Edison that they switch to an alternating current model as opposed to direct current, and Edison
right.
was very much against that idea. So then in 1885, Tesla forms the Tesla Electric Light Company. An investor group actually asks him if he will work on an arc lighting system, and he agrees to do it. And then is later forced out of his own company with nothing to show for it.
Was that all? I mean, because he started the company because he had been he had quit Edison's, correct?
Yeah, essentially that same year he resigns from the Edison company. And some say the reason he did that was because, again, here's another story of Tesla getting cheated,
mm-hmm.
that Edison had promised Tesla a princely sum mm-hmm. of $50,000 for a particular project.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tesla completed the project, again, supposedly with flying colors and beyond all expectations, Edison then said, "Haha, you don't understand American humor. I'm not giving you any money." And then Tesla resigns, even though Edison supposedly at that point offered an enormous raise to keep Tesla there. This makes Edison look like the biggest jerk on the face of the planet. I mean, I can't imagine my boss coming up to me and saying, "Hey, you know when I told you were going to make $50,000 if you did this thing, and then you did that thing, and you did it really well? Well, you're not going to get any money. Oh, you want to leave? I'll raise your salary." That just – like, what kind of crazy person does that?
Yeah, it doesn't sound – I mean, I never met Edison. Did you meet him? You're very old.
Uh-huh. Tesla then claimed that he spent the next year making money by digging ditches.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, a great, great story if you're looking at his life in the terms of like a tragic tale. You know,
uh-huh.
here you have this genius.
Incredible super genius.
The man who will one day light up the United States with his alternating current power grid, making money, scraping by digging ditches. Yeah. Again, a lot of this comes from Tesla himself, and whether or not all of it is true, it remains part of myth, you know?
Yeah.
I don't doubt there were some bad business dealings. I'm sure that was the case. And I don't doubt he had some hard times. And maybe he did make his living for a full year being digging ditches, and that was the only thing he could do. But it sounds like melodrama. But sometimes life works like that. Sometimes
sure.
that's the truth.
Stranger Things.
But anyway, Then by 1887, so, you know, 1886, digging ditches. We don't need to go into any detail there. That's it.
Well, I mean, meanwhile, in 1886, actually, it's interesting, Westinghouse Electric had developed a transformer for commercial use.
Yeah. So that's another thing we should mention is that one of the reasons Tesla was really pushing for this alternating current thing with Edison is that back in Europe, that's what they were using. AC was that's the route they took. They didn't go down the direct current route at all. They went with alternating current, and that becomes important when we start talking about the myths of Tesla as well in a little bit.
Right. Yeah. The U.S. was so embroiled in DC current. The name the Brooklyn Dodgers actually comes because they were using direct current power lines that were kind of haphazardly strung across the city, and Brooklynites had to dodge these lines so often that their team was thus named
the Brooklyn Dodgers. Whereas the New York Giants were called that because they came from a race of mythical creatures that lived up I just wanted to show off that I knew something, too, but I don't really know anything.
No.
1887. After the ditch digging has finished, Tesla begins to work with investors again, and he establishes a lab at 89 Liberty Street in New York. And then
just a few blocks away from Edison's, yeah.
Yeah. And the next year, he starts to talk about AC motors and transformers for the American Institute of Electrical Engineers, now known as the IEEE, or as I always prefer to call them, IE. That one's for all you engineers out there. And he also agrees to start selling patents to George Westinghouse. So even though, you know, Lauren was saying, in 1886, you already had Westinghouse working on transformers and alternating current. That was before Tesla had even started to work for Westinghouse.
Right, right.
That's something to keep in mind as well. So 1889, he establishes a new lab on Grand Street in New York. There's a lot of labs. He had a lot of labs spread out throughout New York. He also lived in hotels, mostly.
Did he even then?
Yeah, mostly toward the end of his life. But yeah, early on, he was living in a lot of hotels as well.
I think he also joked about how his hours, especially when he was working in Edison's lab, were from like 10 in the morning until 5:30 a.m. the next day.
Yeah.
And so that a lot of his sleeping, A, wasn't really sleeping, and B, was probably under his desk.
Right, right. I can identify with that. In 1890, he begins to experiment with wireless power and fluorescent and neon lighting, as well as X-rays, although at the time he isn't sure exactly what they are. He was calling them shadow pictures. Yeah, this was before Wilhelm Röntgen had really established what X-rays were and what they could do. So Tesla was one of the people who was observing the phenomena of X-rays early on.
Yeah, there were a few other people at the time who were working with them, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, that'll go into the myths as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then in 1891, he becomes an American citizen.
Also, I believe, patented the Tesla coil.
There you go. An interesting thing. In 1892, his mother passes away. That same year, he becomes the vice president of the AIEEE, which is even – it's AIE, I guess, is how I would say that. And he becomes famous worldwide for his lectures on alternating current. So at this point, he's on the lecture circuit. I mean, he's going from city to city. You know, he stopped in places like Chicago and New York, London, Paris. So he becomes, again, like I said, like a rock star. He's known for these lectures. And it sounds weird for us to say that he's like a rock star. But this was an era where these thinkers were really pushing the development of technology to a point where everyone was sure that, you know, okay, we're 5 years away from the incredible future.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, they were right.
Oh, sure.
It's just that their view of what the incredible future would be ended up being a lot different from what it really was. But it was an era of rapid development. So these guys were considered to be the people pushing that rapid development. It's really exciting.
Yeah, and things like when the Chicago World Fair was that 1893,
yep.
I want to say?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was famous because there was the whole Edison-Tesla story there about who is going to provide power.
Oh, right. And it was really Edison versus
Westinghouse. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, Westinghouse backed by Tesla, sure.
Sure, yeah. Westinghouse was using technology that Tesla had patented and systems that Tesla worked on, but it was not truly Tesla versus Edison. That's kind of how I think even in a previous episode of Tech Stuff, we sort of talked about it in those terms because that's sort of romantic way of doing it, right? Is the idea of these two geniuses facing off against each other and who will win, and alternating current won out in that one. So it was really Westinghouse that won.
Right. Yeah. The story goes that there was a business deal. The government was looking to contract either Westinghouse's company or Edison's company to power the World's Fair, and Westinghouse won out because it was cheaper.
Yep. Yeah. And when
President Grover Cleveland, I think it was, threw that switch.
I wonder which.
Like 100,000 bulbs lit up all at the same time, and people were like, oh, this is a thing.
Trivia for you folks out there who don't know your history. Grover Cleveland was the only president to serve two non-consecutive terms as president. He was president, then he wasn't president, then he was president again.
Huh.
Yes, he also liked the song Funky Cold Medina. 1895. So then one of the buildings that housed one of Tesla's labs caught fire in 1895, and his lab burned down, and the fire destroyed what was estimated to be about $50,000 worth of equipment and information.
And he had no insurance.
Yeah, and $50,000, it's a lot of money today. It was a huge amount of money in 1895.
And at the time he was experimenting with radio signal.
Yeah.
And supposedly, according to him, was ready to transmit a signal 50 miles out to West Point, New York.
Yeah. So this is during, if you've listened to the old Tech Stuff episode about who invented the radio, there's a lot about Tesla and Marconi, and there's a whole story there too about how Marconi, like Tesla got a patent for the radio. Then Marconi applied for a patent. Then the patent office overturned Tesla's patent, gave Marconi the patent, and then later on overturned it again and gave it back to Tesla.
Later on is in like the 1970s, I want to say.
Yeah, after Tesla was dead.
Yeah, long after.
Yeah, there's that whole story. And there's arguments there too, because, again, the invention of any sort of technology requires that you talk about so many different people who contributed to the discoveries that led to the possibility of something existing, that it's impossible to actually point at one person and say, this person invented radio.
Right.
But both Marconi and Tesla were working on it, and there's argument over who should have real credit there. But go listen to our episode about who invented the radio if you want to hear more about that, because I think that argument is so long and detailed that it's hard to sum up in an episode just about Tesla.
Yeah, yeah. Though it's, yeah, certainly another one of those points that people like to bring up in terms of he was so downtrodden.
Yeah, it's a good another point. Yeah,
yeah. And that's a more firm one that, yeah, he absolutely lost that fight and lost probably a lot of money and fame. I think Marconi won the Nobel Prize and all kinds of fun
stuff. Tesla was not happy about that either.
Unexcited, yeah.
In 1898, he demonstrated a wirelessly controlled model boat, so essentially an RC boat, at the Electrical Exposition in Madison Square Garden, where years later Highlanders would fight it out to determine who would win the prize, and Queen would sing Princes of the Universe in the background.
I didn't really like that documentary.
Whoa. Okay, you know what? We're going to take a little break here. Let's take a moment to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to our show. All right, getting back into Tesla's life, in 1899, he moves to Colorado to perform some experiments with wireless power. Now, this is where one of the big myths about Tesla comes up, this idea that he wanted to build this huge tower that would tap into this resonant frequency that exists around the world and that you could transmit power wirelessly across miles of space. He claimed that he had another one of those visions that let him understand the geoelectrical phenomenon he called terrestrial stationary waves, an idea about tapping into the Earth itself as a conductor.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, and it's not that everything that he said was crazy, or it was just that to be able to actually use this in a way that would allow you to transmit power reliably, safely, without losing power over distance or zapping and killing everybody, is something we haven't solved yet. And there are a lot of people who say that all of his work would have proven, if it still existed, we'll get into more about more destruction of his work and where it all went to, but that if it still existed, it would prove that this sort of thing is possible. And it's only the energy companies that are keeping it down because they stand to lose so much if this information got out. I'm hesitant to agree to anything like that because it suggests that no one but Tesla could have ever come up with this.
Right.
And therefore, the idea is lost forever. When I would argue we have people who are far more informed about electrical engineering than Tesla was, even though he was a brilliant man forward thinker.
Maybe less of, you know, perhaps the people these days are not visionary the way that he was, but.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's it. Maybe they just need to take a walk in the park and look at a sunset.
Think about some poetry.
That would help, I guess. You know, but hey, far be it from me to downplay the importance of poetry in the world. I certainly think it's important, being an English lit major. In 1901, so he starts to think really about wireless power and the phenomena that it would be, like what would go into making this and how it would change the world. And he really was thinking it was an interesting idea. So in 1901, with funding from various sources, including people like J.P. Morgan, he starts to build the Wardenclyffe Tower.
This is out at Long Island Sound.
And this thing is supposed to be a wireless power transmitting station, essentially. And within 1903, he starts to test it, even though the tower itself is not completed at that point.
Mm-hmm. And this was a tower that again reached deep into the ground to kind of tap into
this terrestrial. Mm-hmm. Wave, stationary wave.
Yeah, I actually have a really great quote from Tesla, if I can read it out. Excellent. In the system that I have invented, It is necessary for the machine to get a grip on the Earth. Otherwise, it cannot shake the Earth. It has to have a grip so that the whole of this globe can quiver.
Yeah, if you also remember the story about Tesla putting an oscillating motor onto a building and then nearly shaking it to its foundation, that kind of dates from the same sort of concept.
Right.
Earth is still here, by the way, so that's kind of a spoiler alert to how this story plays out.
Mythbusters actually cracked that one in an episode back in 2006, I think.
Yeah, they showed that it could, like a small repetitive motion could cause a bridge to start to shake a little.
Mm-hmm. Enough to notice a couple hundred feet away.
Right, but not necessarily enough to make it crumble into pieces.
Right.
But anyway,
small earthquake.
Wardenclyffe Tower becomes an important part of Tesla's life. It was one of these things that he really thought that the terrestrial stationary waves was the discovery of his life that was the most important. Mm-hmm. Out of everything that he'd worked with alternating current, with transformers, with all these other technologies, those paled in comparison to this one. And so Wardenclyffe Tower was very important to him. Unfortunately, there weren't a lot, he didn't have a whole lot to show for it. And also, he was running up the electric bill.
Yeah, and Morgan was getting pretty sick of it. Meanwhile, across the ocean, Marconi had signaled the letter S across the Atlantic.
Yeah, that didn't make Tesla happy.
And Marconi was just such a newspaper darling.
Yeah, he was, again, yet another person who was very good at catering to the media to get a message across. So, not unusual at this time. So in 1904, the Colorado lab is torn down due to excessive use of electricity, and the building materials are sold for scrap to pay for the cost.
Oh, yeah. Ouch.
And in 1906, like you said, J.P. Morgan, who had been an investor, withdraws, and Tesla has to end up laying off a lot of employees over at Wardenclyffe Tower. We're going to skip ahead a few years because this is essentially where he's working on this Wardenclyffe Tower experiment, which ends up draining a lot of his energy, literally, and resources, and without a lot to show for it. The next date I have is 1911, when he started working with steam turbines and electricity production. This was a big development. It was very important in the whole part of generating electricity for a growing need in America, because at this point, you're starting to see communities get wired for electricity, and beyond just the narrow band in the Northeast that had it. So it was important to find different ways of generating it beyond firing from coal plants.
Sure.
They wanted to find something that was sustainable even at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1912, Tesla suffered another setback, although not one nearly as large as Lady Astor. John Jacob Astor, who was one of Tesla's most wealthy and enthusiastic investors, stopped investing in Tesla's work because he stopped breathing.
Oh,
he was aboard a little boat called the Titanic.
Oh, I've heard of that one. I think I saw a documentary about it once.
Yeah, his heart will go on, but his investment payments stopped.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he went down with the boat. He did get Lady Astor on a lifeboat, so he made sure his wife was safe, and he stayed behind to wait for his turn to get on a lifeboat, but tragically was not able to do that, and he did die. And with that, Tesla lost one of his most significant sources of investment money. So it was another financial setback for Tesla. I don't think he could blame that one on Edison.
No.
Maybe Marconi, because we're talking about the use of radios on the Titanic, but then that was more of a personnel thing than a technology thing. 1915, Tesla and Edison are both listed as being considered for a Nobel Prize.
Ah.
And that they would be co-recipients of the Nobel Prize.
Huh.
When the Nobel Prizes are announced, the prize goes to two people.
Mm-hmm.
That would be William Henry Bragg and his son. Now, the Nobel Committee admitted that Edison and Tesla were under consideration for the Nobel Prize, but they did not say any more than that. What has come up since then as the rumor, which is gospel in some corners of the internet, that the reason why Tesla and Edison did not receive the Nobel Prize together is because they'd rather be caught dead than to share a prize with the other man.
That's a good myth.
Yeah, the rivalry was so great that they would both refuse a Nobel Prize rather than have to share it with the other. That's pretty amazing. And it may be true. That when I say rumor, I don't mean that it's fake or false or a lie. I just mean that we don't know for sure.
Sure, sure.
Other people probably do, but I don't. 1916, Tesla declares bankruptcy. He did not pass go or collect $200.
No,
it was just not a good year for him. In 1917, he ended up proposing what would, depending upon whom you ask. Okay, some people will say in 1917, Tesla predicted radar.
Radar?
Yeah, that he was the guy who came up with radar, but the government turned him down. The Navy Board said that they would not invest in such a technology. By the way, the person from private industry who was on the Navy Board, Edison.
Well, he was, from what I understand about the story, Tesla had proposed this way of finding ships underwater.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? So the more you look into it, the more you realize it's not radar he's talking about, not in the sense that we use it today.
Well, he was talking about radar, but it was not really the best system for finding ships underwater. And so therefore, when the government, when the Navy didn't really give him the go-ahead, it wasn't because radar is dumb, or the Tesla is dumb. It was because it wasn't the right technology for the application.
Yeah. What Tesla did not take into account was he wanted to use tightly controlled electric beams of energy to zap them into the water to reflect off the surfaces of submarines, detect those reflections, and the information would be displayed back in a fluorescent display,
mm-hmm.
which sounds great, except for the problem is that these beams would attenuate underwater, and so you would not get accurate representations of what you were looking at. You wouldn't,
right.
You couldn't be sure that, you know, you could be pointing it directly at a submarine and miss it because of this attenuation problem. And so it just isn't practical for the use that Tesla was suggesting it. And so that shows that Tesla had a misunderstanding either of the physics of water or the technology itself. Either way, it wasn't truly radar. It's not exactly the same thing that radar is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not being used in the way that radar ultimately would be used. So while some people claim that he invented radar, that's being a little generous. We just busted a myth, and I apologize because I haven't gotten to that section yet.
Oh, no.
But that's okay. That's one less for us to worry about when we get there. In 1934.
Wait, actually, if we can step back just a second.
Sure. Yes. Let's please.
In 1919, he published an autobiography called My Inventions that was published in six parts in the Electrical Experimenter magazine. And
yeah.
This is important because it is one of the main sources of information about Tesla's life.
Which is why you have to take everything with a grain of salt, because mm-hmm. he was a bit of a self-promoter. So
yes.
I'm not saying that Tesla was lying in his autobiography. What I'm saying is you just have to take into consideration the possibility that he may have exaggerated some facts.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not that he was purposefully trying to mislead people, but that when you become a self-promoter, that can happen. Even if you don't mean it to happen, it can happen, which is kind of crazy that you're just, you know, in your mind, you're like, this is totally how it happened. And then anyone else is like, dude, I was there. And that totally is not how it happened.
Jonathan, you've never beheaded anyone in the cold blood of a fight.
Not in the cold blood of a fight. 1934, the New York Times publishes an article about Tesla's death ray.
Death beam.
Yeah, this was Tesla said that he had come up with an idea that would allow governments to build a device capable of emitting a beam of energy that could bring down a fleet of 10,000 enemy planes at a distance of 250 miles. And that his idea was that by outfitting pretty much everybody with one of these, you would have that mutually assured destruction that makes peace possible.
All right. He actually called it a peace beam, from what I understand.
Yeah. He said that it would really end war, because how could you have war if you can't fly over another country without worrying about your entire fleet being destroyed? Then obviously war is off the table.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of his somewhat naive plan. And whether or not this thing would ever work is another interesting question, or if there ever was anything beyond just this idea that, hey, maybe one day I could build something that does this.
Mm-hmm.
That's another, you know, it's another one of those things. It's
uh-huh.
a myth, right?
Yeah.
1937, he decided to go feed the pigeons in the park, which was a bad decision to make that particular day. As he was crossing the street, he was struck by a cab.
Oof.
Then, depending upon which report you read, he flew 35 to 40 feet in the air and landed and was perfectly unharmed except a little bruised. or he had broken several ribs. It all depends on which person you're asking. Tesla said, "Nah, I'm all right." Other people were like, "Dude, he was messed up. He was crying about his pigeons. It was ugly."
He had at this point become a little bit destitute due to all of these various financial troubles over the years and basic misspending, I think, had
– Yeah. There were a lot of hotels that were suing him because he had lived inside the hotel for years and years and owed them thousands of dollars, and then he would relocate to a different hotel. And you think, like, why would another hotel even trust him? He was Tesla. Again, this is a rock star guy, and it elevates the status of your hotel that he's staying there. But you can only have Lindsay Lohan in your hotel for so long before you're like, seriously, could you please stop making holes in the walls and throwing TVs out the window?
Guys, I am sitting across from the person who had just compared Nikola Tesla to Lindsay Lohan.
I think it's an apt comparison. Look, Lindsay Lohan hasn't reached the age Tesla was at when he started to really contribute to humanity. So I think we owe her a year or two.
I'm just saying that if anyone actually figures out Tesla's particle beam and aims it at the HSW offices, just let me know. I'm perfectly willing to give you Jonathan's geosynchronous coordinates.
Please keep in mind that stuff you missed in history class and stuff Mom never told you sit really near me. So if you love those shows, keep your beam particle pointed somewhere else. That's not cool.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court, and what's next. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
January 7th, 1943 was a bad day for Tesla because that's the day he passed on. He was 86 years old. And 2 days later, all of his papers and estate was seized by the government.
Well, some stories say that his nephew showed up the morning after he passed away and that his body had already been removed and that the nephew noticed that it seemed like some of his papers were missing.
Yeah, this is where one of those stories pops up. In fact, now that we've had Tesla shuffle off the mortal and Tesla coil.
Oh, no.
Thank you. I've been waiting to use that one. We can talk a little bit about this idea. So there are a lot of rumors out there. One of the big rumors is that the FBI seized all of Tesla's papers and did so in an effort to use them for various nefarious purposes for the United States government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keep in mind, this is 1943. World War II is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a genuine concern that information that has scientific significance could fall into the hands of other nations and give other nations a lot of advantages over mm-hmm. the United States. And so it was very important to guard whatever advantages you had against that.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, remember that Tesla was a Serbian American.
Yep.
As such, the from what we can discern of fact, it was actually the Department of Justice Alien Property Custodian Office that temporarily seized his papers.
Right. So it was not the FBI. It was the Department of Justice.
And the FBI still, they've got like a top 10 myths on the internet.
Yeah, and that's number 10. Yeah, number 10 is that we took Tesla's papers like guys.
They're like, guys, we didn't.
For reals, yo. We didn't grab those. And actually, I looked into it, and it wouldn't be until... Well, you know, if you read most of the stories, it's like the FBI took the papers and they never released them. And we demand that these papers be released.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, it was the Department of Justice, number one. And number two, in 1952, they sent the papers to Kasanovich, his nephew.
And that is 9 years later.
Yeah. All right. Granted, 9 years later. We're also talking about time during not just the World War II, but the Red Scare as well.
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, not that justifies suppressing information. Also, you're talking about the government. So it may very well be that there wasn't any intentional slowness on the part of the government. That's just the way the government works.
Right.
But I don't know.
Yeah,
I honestly
yeah.
don't know. What I do know is they did release the estate and the papers.
And back to Yugoslavia to his nephew.
Yeah.
They wound up in a museum devoted to Tesla out there.
So if you're one of the people demanding that there's a Tesla museum, good news. There is. You just have to go to Europe mm-hmm. to see it.
Also, supposedly, after World War II was over, copies of his papers were sent out to one of the Air Force bases. And Project Nick was a thing. That was heavily funded, and then the papers disappeared, never to be seen again.
Yeah, there are a lot of conspiracy theories mm-hmm. here. There was one person posted on Facebook when I mentioned that we were going to be covering Tesla today. So are you going to talk about how they used a lot of his work and the developments of stuff in Area 51? And the answer to that is no, because there's no real documentation of that.
Right.
There's actually quite a bit of information about what went on at Area 51. It's stuff that was top secret at the time. But we'll have to do an episode all about Area 51 sometime in the future, just because it's a fascinating topic.
Yeah.
But it's all about, you know, developing things like stealth technology and various mm-hmm. kinds of test prototypes for the Air Force or for the Army. But nothing like the Tesla Death Ray, at least nothing that shows up in any real record.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that the reason why it doesn't show up on a real record is probably because it didn't exist. My second choice would be it didn't work, and so there was no point in writing more about it. I don't think we would still be debating whether or not it exists if it actually did exist, because someone would have come forward by now.
Probably.
Or would have zapped somebody.
Although there is Stuff They Don't Want You to Know did an episode a couple years ago on this. You can go check that out on YouTube.
That's true.
I'll post a link to it.
Oh, Bolin. Then also, here's some other myths that Tesla invented alternating current. He did not.
He did not.
Alternating current was already a thing in Europe by the time Tesla was born. It wasn't widespread. It wasn't like there was a huge power grid in Europe, but there were people working on alternating current and even working on things like induction motors and transformers at that time. And so Tesla even studied alternating current when he was in school. So it's not something that he invented. He did, however, take the knowledge that was being generated around alternating current and applied it and furthered it. So it's not that he just copied someone else's work. He really did make legitimate contributions.
Oh, sure. And it was his patents and his work with Westinghouse that led to alternating current becoming the thing that the U.S. uses.
Yeah.
And the thing that is capable of going across long distances. And both of those are extremely, extremely important. I mean,
right.
You can't downplay either of those.
Yeah, but exactly. Yes. But, you know.
He did not invent it.
He didn't invent it. He's not the reason why it's what's being used in Europe. That's one thing we can kind of put to bed. And in fact, the first work with alternating current dates back to 1835, which was, you know, 20 years before Tesla was born. So unless he also invented time travel, and don't write me and tell me he did, that's not the case.
Look, I would believe anything after watching The Prestige.
Yeah, again, another documentary, right? Beyond that, Westinghouse, like we pointed out, was working on distribution grids, designs for AC power, and transformers before Tesla had even started to work for the company. Now, granted, again, Tesla's patents and the information that he was able to provide to Westinghouse ended up making those much more robust, and it made it possible to actually act on that. But again, it shows that he's not the only one working on this at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's also not the guy who invented transformers. Those were first being used in Budapest in the 1870s.
Right.
And the very first modern transformer was built by William Stanley in 1885.
Hmm.
He did not invent the fluorescent lamp. Alexandre E. Becquerel was the first guy to observe fluorescence, and he did so in 1857 when Tesla was one. So, again, unless Tesla was also observing fluorescence at 1 year old, and maybe he was. I mean, he was born in a storm, after all. Thor was his buddy. You can't say that he invented that. He did not discover X-rays.
As we covered before.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Ivan Pouliouy. I have no idea how to say his last name. I know I just butchered it. But Ivan, my buddy, Ivan, he had actually observed the phenomena of X-rays before Tesla had. But just like Tesla, he wasn't really sure what it was he was looking at. He thought it was interesting, but he wasn't really sure about, you know, what this stuff actually is. It wouldn't be until Wilhelm Röntgen really looked into it and began to make theories and hypotheses and test
published some really clever things about them.
Yeah. That's when we started to know that what they were. But other scientists had been observing it. They just didn't understand it. Again, we talked about the radar thing, and we talked about FBI. So those are the big myths. Other myths are, you know, the whole Tesla versus Edison thing. It was really more Edison companies versus Westinghouse companies, and
sure,
not so much a personality thing.
Well, it does sound like the two of them clashed. There are a whole bunch of reports about how, I mean, right from the get-go, they didn't really like each other.
Right.
And it's easy to see, you know, they were both very strong personalities and very big showmen, and it doesn't sound like either of them really liked, not that anyone likes it, but to be made a fool of.
Yeah.
And both of them were in the business of, in fact, trying to make a fool of the other person, so.
Yeah, there was some of that. There was some showmanship. There was clearly some sort of legitimate beef between Edison and Tesla, at least as far as, you know, Tesla getting the credit that he wanted. And Tesla, you know, a lot of his fortunes switched mainly because he made some really bad business deals. He sold patents off at a pittance.
Oh, yeah.
At times, because the company would come to him and say, you know, there's this massive economic downturn coming. We need these patents, but if we pay you what they're worth, then we're going to go under. And,
yeah,
and Tesla's like, well, I'll cut you a deal.
Yeah, yeah. They were basically kind of like, can we give you a tenth of the fee that we're going to promise you and then give you some stock right before a terrible economic downturn? And Tesla was like, yes,
stock,
yes, you can.
Stock is good. Give me that.
And the famous Westinghouse deal where even though Westinghouse won the so-called War of the Currents, the company was not doing well and wound up after they had built the generator at Niagara, I think, started to go under. And
there were some issues with mostly it was just, again, just poor decisions on Tesla's part.
Tesla let him out of the contract. Said like, oh no, you don't have to pay me the rest. That's fine. You save your company.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, which is great. I mean, it's lovely. It's terrific. I mean, but you know, it's when you end up having no friends other than pigeons and owing every hotel in New York money. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, yeah. That could be one of the factors. He certainly, and I know that people are probably listening to this episode and thinking that I think Tesla was a worthless layabout. Nothing could be further from the truth. I think he really did make incredible contributions to the success of the United States in general and to several technologies around the world in particular. But it's also important not to overstate his contributions and to understand,
especially at the expense of other very important inventors and, right, and minds and works.
It's a disservice to everyone else who worked on these same things and helped make them a reality, really, in our lives. And you know, you got to also pay attention to some of the crazier ideas, like the death ray.
The death ray, yeah.
Or being able to move the entire Earth with putting essentially a wire around it and tapping into the frequency that it generates. Which, hey, maybe that is possible. It's just not practical.
Right, yeah. I think that's a problem with a lot of his latter theories, is they were not particularly practical.
Yeah, yeah. So
he was also, I mean, there's stories about him having a couple of nervous breakdowns at various times in his life. I think that he was probably not necessarily mentally well,
yeah,
for a great deal of his existence.
I agree. I think he probably had quite a few issues to work through.
And that, I mean, you know, considering how well we treat those kind of people today, it is easy to see how at the turn of the century he was not particularly given the chances that he needed.
I don't know, man. Lindsay Lohan, she's not treated that well. You know, I'm just saying.
In our next episode about Lindsay Lohan, hi.
Yeah. I'm just glad TMZ didn't exist back when Tesla was active.
Oh, my goodness. That is, yes, that is the best thing on the planet.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna wrap this up. So anyway, that's our episode about Tesla. We really do think he was a remarkable person. It's just important to really turn a critical eye and make sure that you don't elevate someone beyond their what their actual contributions were, I think. But I'm sure a lot of you have things you want to say to me now. So if you would like to say something to me, pray do it in a way that is civil, and send it to me. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com, or let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Also be civil, but in shorter form. Our handle at both of those locations is techstuffhsw. And Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Badeda. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC, We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.